Thank you. This is quite the topic. But we have to have this topic as part of our yearly discussion. For those of you that are new, this year we picked practicing with everyday Dhamma. So how do we practice with everyday situations? And many of you might think that social justice or social engagement is not part of your everyday life, but actually, I would beg to differ. And I think spending a month talking about how do we practice in this area is really will support our practice in the long run. I just wanted to give you an example. I want to start with a story. We used to start with kid stories, but there's no really kids anymore. So I'm just going to give you a regular adult story. But so when I graduated from law school and my first job, I was a prosecutor and I stayed a prosecutor for 25 years. And over the course of that 25 years, I'd say the first good 15 of them, I had a pretty solid view that anybody that committed a crime was a quote unquote bad guy, bad person. If you were not, you didn't commit crimes. And it was pretty solid and it was pretty absolute. And, I had a little bit of, okay, I could understand life is hard, but it's bad. That's it. And I really didn't have any fudge room outside of that. I pretty much held that judgment for a long time. And the thing about judgments is you don't know you're holding that judgment. You have a, it's like a an assumption that's made, and your view fits in that window, and you don't know that that view is so constricting. So I used to go to a small people of color sit, and it was mostly people of color, but there were some white people that came, and there was one white guy and one black guy that used to come to the sit every, it was once a month. And I began to notice that these two guys had a way of connecting to people. It didn't matter what the topic was, and we talked a lot of politics. I don't know how much Dhamma we did, but we did a lot of politics, and we did a sit and a lot of politics. But these two guys used to have a way of being able to articulate what someone else said, as if they totally understood it, even if they didn't agree. And I was so impressed with them, and I wanted to learn. I remember talking to one of them about, did you guys take some kind of training? What is that? And they told me about nonviolent communication from Marshall Rosenberg. And so I tried to get, they told me about this organization called Freedom Project that would go into prisons and teach nonviolent communication and to inmates. And so I did a lot of prodding to try to get that group to do a class for a group of us so we could become volunteers and we could volunteer. And I'm thinking, I'm just going to volunteer. And then I came. Like the class got set up. One, the black guy, I figured he was like a drug dealer type. I got to kind of deal with that, but it's just a drug dealer. And then I found out that the people that were going to offer this class, like I think maybe the night before is when someone told me that the one guy was a rapist and one guy was a smuggler. And I'm going to go and take a class from two people, two men who represent, if anything, the truth that there are bad, evil people in the world. And I remember driving to that house, sitting in that car, vacillating between my heart that saw the way they spoke and something was different. And I could learn something. And my mind that was like, girl, you're going up in a bunch of mess. These people are not to be trusted. Everyone's going to laugh at you if they find out where you live and they come get you. And I vacillated for a good 15, 20 minutes. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. About who these people were. And I'm grateful to God that my heart ran out, won out. And I went to the house, even though I was seriously late. And the guy whose house it was at, they lived together. One of the guys that was doing the class said, oh, we didn't think you were going to come. I said, I almost didn't. I don't even know if I trust coming up in here. This is not okay. And he goes, well, that's okay. He says, how about if we leave the door open? You sit over there by the door. So if you need to make a mad dash, you can make a mad dash. And I did. I put my chair by an open door. And we shifted the whole class, so the circle of the whole class shifted over so that I could sit by the door. And every week I would come in and sit by that door. Any moment I could make a mad dash. Door was always open. And I remember the day that I came in, I was talking to people, I closed the door, sat in my chair, kind of shifted my chair over, and Walter asked me, do you want us to open the door? And I said, no, I'm good. I'm good. Good. Something had shifted in me. My view had changed, really, what happened. I saw what I thought of criminals in one way. I saw them differently. And I started volunteering in prisons, both men's prisons, women's prisons. They knew I was a prosecutor. I knew they were inmates. And I heard some seriously sad stories. I heard some really bad. I've seen grown men break down and cry in front of other men because they finally get, oh, I could have did my life completely different. What? Wait, wait, something is, really? Is it that easy? I've seen women lose it because they're realizing that the resentments in their minds, the undealt with pain that they spent their life with, has been pushing them all along, and they didn't have to. So I want to talk about that shift. That shift is what I think social engagement is about, is coming to understand that our prejudices, our judgments, our assumptions is what's driving the pain. Just to get it a little bit more clear. So two things here. I cannot do the talk I want to do in the time of a Sunday morning sit. So we have to think of this talk as two parts. I'm going to do part one today, and I'm going to do part one next week so that I can fill it out more, but I wouldn't have the time to do it the way I really want to. So I want us to get a view of the world we live in, because we live in a world. If you think you're crazy over social justice, you should grasp that, yes, we live in a world where we are crazy over social justice. We are constantly told about deforestation. It's all over the place. Oh my God, the level of tearing down the trees in Brazil and everywhere. It's like there's a panic there that gets created because if they tear those trees down, how terrible it's going to be to the overall climate. we are constantly, we watched the progression out of Afghanistan and the level of fear that anyone that watched that probably had in their own lives, even though we aren't even in Afghanistan, but the level of fear and panic we feel because we are watching things unfold in our very eyes. Refugees, we've seen videos of mistreatment of Black people by cops. I mean, we already know George Floyd. These things leave an imprint in us. If we don't hold them in the Dhamma, they do some serious damage to us, all of us. So between racism and misogyny and homophobia, all the cruelty for animals, I mean, all the pictures, the commercials of animals that are just suffering so badly. Please help. And children in Africa dying. Please help. It's all. Please help. Please help. Please help. You have to help these people. There's no time content to it. There's no place. There's no nothing. It's just pain is what we are subjected to constantly. And it's important to know this. It's important to know that part of the overwhelm is because of the society we live in that bombards us with the pain of the world. It's not to take away from the pain of the world. It's to recognize that we are acutely aware of the pain of the world. And the only being I know who experienced that kind of pain is Avalokiteshvara. And Avalokiteshvara was a bodhisattva, deep practitioner. He was close to enlightenment. But he kept hearing all this pain and he couldn't go into this kind of blissful state of, I guess I'm all on my own now. Everybody else is there. You guys got to get yours. I got mine. He couldn't do that. And he decided to turn back and he would not get enlightened until he had saved every being so that every being could be enlightened. That's sort of like the way we take on practice. So Avalokiteshvara turns back and he's going to take on all this suffering. He's trying to find suffering everywhere. He's bringing it into himself and he's transforming it and he's sending it out. He's doing all these practices to try to free the world from all this suffering. And more suffering comes every day. Every day he's transforming it, sending it out. Every day more suffering. Suffering, suffering, suffering. Suffering, suffering, suffering. To the point where the story goes that Avalokiteshvara just exploded into a zillion pieces. I mean, that's what happens to us. We get overwhelmed. We explode. But the Buddha, it said, and not the Buddha, but Buddhas, there's more than one, put Avalokiteshvara back together again. But they had to put him back together in a different way. See, one man cannot solve all the suffering in the world. Neither can you. You, as an individual, you can't do all this. So they put Avalokiteshvara back together as Kuan Yin, woman, not because male or female, but more, I mean, not man or woman. Think of it as male or female. So a feminine energy that we all have. So that feminine energy plus gave her 1,000 arms. You've seen these pictures of 1,000 arms. I think I've told you guys, my mother, I had one of those pictures of Kuan Yin with 1,000 arms, many, many heads, lots of ears and eyes and My mother would not come in the house. She walked in the door, she saw that picture, and she walked right back out. She's like, you got to do something with that picture before I come in here. It's like, Lord have mercy. Can I tell you the story? It's beautiful. She's like, no, you got to put that thing away. Take it away somewhere. Anyway, Kuan Yin became this representative of what it takes to do this. So one, we got to shift our view. We got to shift our view on this, I got to fix everything. Two, we got to begin to recognize it takes a lot of diversity to deal with the level of pain that there is in the world. Kuan Yin had 1,000 arms. She had 1,000 weapons to take on all these different levels of suffering. She has to see. She has eyes all around her head so she can see it, see the pain all over the place. She got a zillion ears so she can hear even the little tiny cries that, you know, people who are suffering and they don't think anybody knows that they're there. She can hear that. This is what it takes to take on social justice. It's complicated and difficult. So today, I really just want us to think about one thing. And that is right view. We got to have right view when we approach anything in Dhamma. Everything turns on the view you have. So the view I had going into that class to learn nonviolent communication, I was in wrong view. It was dualistic. There are good guys and there are bad guys, and these people are clearly the bad guys. It was dualistic. It was judgmental. This idea that, you know, I would even go in and fix people. All of that. I put a value on me versus them. And they, between the two of them, had something like 70, 80 years of prison time. And I had never been in prison. So, of course, my value is up here, and their value is down here. But in that car, when I made that distinction, what came to me is they had their value increased. And I had to split with that dualistic view, and I had to see them as part of my own liberation. So shifting our view to right view becomes very important. And I just want to note three things before we take a break, you know, we stop and just talk about the view part. So in order for us to practice a month with social engagement and have this sense of right view, we have to hold it in the three characteristics that we hold all life in, that we hold all practice in. Because all things, even social injustice, climate change, all of these horrific things we see and are told about without time, context, anything, we just know it. It's all subject to the three characteristics. It's all conditional. And as such, we have to hold it in that. So first thing, it's impermanent. It's impermanent, meaning that it arises together. There's no duality. Duality, we were talking about Thursday night. Think of duality is we have hard line judgment about who is good and who is bad. This is going to challenge everything that you believe here. Because as long as we have the hard line judgment as to who's good and who's bad, we can't ever get past that judgment. That's the way we live in the world. So I think a better way to hold this non-dualistic thing is with harm. Not who's good, who's bad, but where is harm? Where is non-harm? Where is harm? Where is non-harm? So all you're doing is correcting the harm. And when I used to go into prisons, I stopped trying to fix people's lives as in, oh, this was unfair. It was almost like all the men and women wanted me to know how unfair it was that they were in prison. And I can't fix any of that. So I begin to look at it as, well, how do you hold that unfairness? How do you hold it since this is where you are and this is your current reality? How are you going to hold it in a way that frees you from the pain of it? I cannot tell you how shifting just that much, just from dwelling on the harm, I mean, dwelling on the injustice of it, to dwelling on the harm, the pain, and how do you hold pain? Even injustice, unjust pain. How do you hold that? It was so, so palpable. I look back, I can't believe that I worked as a trial attorney for 5 days a week, and I would spend every Saturday in a prison. Every Saturday I spent in a prison. So this went on for like 10 years. Dow and I would do this. And when I look back, I don't do near that much kind of time now. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm overwhelmed. I can't do anymore. But back then, I did so much because I did not carry the weight of the pain of the unfairness or the injustice or why all these men and women were in prison. I just carried in that moment, how do we hold this pain right here? That's it. So shifting our view from this dualistic right-wrong to just understanding where the harm is and what can be done in this moment. Second thing is we have to let go of this idea that we're going to fix the problem. I wish I could fix racism and misogyny and the violence to children and this whole slavery point too. I wish I could fix all that. But I can't, because it's just me. And it includes other people that I can't control. And it includes conditions I don't have any control over. So instead of you recognize the dukkha of existence in this human body, which means that I'm going to have to lose some things I like. Things are going to change. That's what I kept telling myself when I went from Obama's era to Trump era. Like, okay, things have changed. It was dramatic. I didn't expect it, because that's what attachment does. I got attached to the way it was under Obama, and then all of a sudden, phew, everything shifted. That is the nature of life. So everything is subject to change. Things that I enjoy are subject to leave. Things that I don't want are sort of subject to come, and I don't get to have any say in it. And then the third way is the way that we put value over things, like some people's opinions are better than others, a sense of self-righteousness. I'm right, they're wrong. So beginning to see that concept they, you can just think about it with something as simple as this. If somebody told you they were a Republican, what would happen to your mind? All the judgments that would, all the proliferation that would come just because you heard they were a Republican. Or you assume everybody at Sims is a Democrat. Because clearly they can't be Republicans. We know how they are. And then if you hear that someone's a Republican, what happens? Everything shifts. That thinking is not reality. That thinking is our egoic sense that just holds our realization. So for today, then the next week we'll go a little bit deeper here. For today, or for the week, I'm going to give a longer, fuller Dhamma talk tomorrow. But for this week, this day, to think about just something as simple as this. Who are the others in your world? Just the others. Now, Joseph Goldstein one time said that if you want to know how compassionate you are, pay attention to who does not warrant your compassion. That's how you know how compassionate you are. So who are the others? Who are the people who, you know, I mean, I can list you my list of others. So you know that we all have others. But who are the others that you need to include them into your practice? Because right now, they're outside of your practice. And if they're outside of your practice, it's dualistic. What issues of engagement are you trying to fix? What do you want to fix? Okay, I want to end this. I got to do something. I got to fix it. It's like the Texas abortion law. A friend of mine and I were talking about it. It was sort of like, at first, all we were talking about was how wrong it was. I can't believe this is happening. What are we going to do? And it was just so overwhelming. And then somehow, you know, we're both practitioners. We eventually begin to settle into, oh, we were less concerned about how this shouldn't be and shifted our attention to this is just the way it is. So what can we do now? What can we do? What can you do? What can I do? How can we do this? And then we just started talking about things we could do. And then was laughter and playing, and we were getting quite creative on things we were going to do. But most of those things are not doable. But still, the shift in our hearts shifted when we were less complaining about this shouldn't be and shifted our view to this is the way it is right now. Something unpleasant has come to us, and something that was pleasant has left. And that's just the way we are right now. And so living in this world makes it different. So that's what I want you to think about. Do you put more value on the people who believe that there's a climate change issue coming upon us and less value on the people who don't believe that? Are they less because they don't believe in climate change, or where do we put our values as to who are the good people and who are the bad people? You have to sort of look at these things so you can begin to see that in order to hold it all in your practice, then it can't have a right, wrong, good, bad, evil versus good, that kind of thing. No fixing. Where is it evil versus good? And then, just the idea that we hold dualistic, that there is a us and them. So that's what I want us to think about. However it comes to you, whatever comes up for you. And for those of you that don't really want to talk about this right now, this morning, we can say goodbye. It's good. We always give people the opportunity to get out, and that while I'm setting up the rooms. So I thank you so much for your attention. We're just going to start this subject. Next week, we're going to talk a little bit deeper into ways we can actually practice with it. I want to talk about how various practices actually are part and parcel of how we hold social justice type issues. All right, so thank you so much. I'll start making the rooms, and those of you that want to, we'll have rooms of three. Okay, great. We're good. So let's take 15 minutes. We'll come back about 20 minutes too. And there won't be a lot of time for us to do an open share, but it's all right because I really just want you to approach the subject and we'll talk about it more next week. All right. Yeah. So we just have just a few minutes if anybody wanted to share something, and then we'll talk more next week. Rather than sharing something, let me just ask you a couple of questions and you just shake your head. Can you see how you need to begin to look at your othering? Can you see that? Can you see how that othering creates a tension in your practice that keeps you from being able to be with some of these massive issues that we have to face? Can you see that? And can you see that can you see how coming into right view with the three characteristics that you can begin to approach all of the levels of difficulty we have to approach in a way that's helpful? Can you see that? Good. That's all this is. This is just the start. You know, just to take a look at the beginning and see what we can notice. And then as time goes on, you will naturally increase your capacity. All right, good.